From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was first made in 2008 on the campus of RIT. Barry Culhane, assistant to the president of RIT, launched a festival called Imagine RIT, and it recalls the early days of the Rochester International Jazz Festival. A good early crowd, maybe not as huge as it would become, taking in some great entertainment and even some education. And like the Jazz Fest, Imagine RIT has grown tremendously. In 6 years, more than 175,000 visitors have attended Imagine RIT, and it's only a one-day event. The idea is to showcase innovation and creativity, the new ideas that could impact and help shape our future, from innovation in movie making to designing safer cars to solutions on how to help the most impoverished parts of the globe. Imagine RIT is designed to have no limits to a good idea. This year's Imagine event, 3 days away. And the founder, Barry Culhane, is here in studio. Barry, nice to see you.
Evan, always nice to see you.
Well, thanks for being here. We also welcome Heather Catone, who's chair of logistics, among other things, for Imagine RIT. We're going to be leaning on you for some of the details. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Evan. Thank you.
Barry, I can't be the only one who sees the parallel to the Jazz Festival, especially because, you know, the Jazz Festival is this huge event now. And in the early days, you're hoping for a good crowd. You never know. Start small, get bigger. That's Imagine RIT. Though you started so small that the rumor is that on the eve of the first one in 2008, you were kind of standing there wondering, is anybody going to come to this?
You know, it's a terrible feeling, Evan. You know, you do all this planning and you really get ready for this big event, I hope.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're out the first time we had the opening ceremony in the back of the field house, the Gordon Field House. And so I'm there with President Dessler, and there's a couple of musicians and a few dignitaries. And I'm sitting there, and it's 10 minutes to the opening, and nobody's around. And I'm going, oh, my God, what if we had a festival and nobody came? So luckily, 17,000 people showed
17,000 people. Yeah. I love that story because you took it on faith that you put a great event like this together and people will come. But it's not – and this has become – it's a family event.
Oh, yeah.
And it's targeted for everybody, but really targeted at – middle school and high school students as well, right?
It is, and now this year we've got several thousand students coming, I think about 8 busloads from Gates Child alone. So we're really happy that part of the group that has really figured this out and is working with us and coming out to the festival.
When did you approach Bill Dessler and to tell him, okay, people are coming, we can breathe now, 2008?
I think he was having the same thoughts I had, but, you know. He was always worried about the weather, and so far we've had 6 great Saturdays. A little sprinkle the first year, which is what I think will happen this year. I've been predicting for a couple months 65 and cloudy, and it looks like it'll
close
be
enough.
Close to that.
Yeah, close enough.
But he was wondering too, because he had this idea from University of Maryland, where they draw from Baltimore and Washington D.C. So he wanted. First time out, 30,000 people. Well, I knew that wasn't very likely given the population. So I was very happy with 17.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
You know, we quickly went from there to 25 the next year, 30. And we've consistently been 32 to 35,000 people now in the last 3 years. So we're very lucky.
Later this hour, we're going to meet some of the young minds behind the exhibits and presentations and demonstrations that you'll be able to see on Saturday at Imagine RIT. Some very cool and creative stuff. And if you want to join the conversation, we've had some questions this week about how to call in and how to interact with the program. You might have heard that we've launched a partnership with WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio. So from Ithaca to the edge of Rochester, you can hear us on 89.5 FM and, of course, 1370 AM in much of Western New York. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us, and we're going to use the old number for a little while. We've had some questions on that. 263-WXXI, 263-9994 will still work, but it's 844-295-TALK. That's the number we want you to use, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. So, Heather, how many exhibits on Saturday will be on display at Imagine RIT?
At least 400, and that includes live entertainment on our performance stages, and that encompasses 2,700 at least exhibitors that comprise RIT students, faculty, and staff.
And it's from 10 to 5 mm-hmm. on Saturday, rain or shine. Give me a sense, if you've never been to Imagine RIT, what does the campus look like, and where do you park? Give me a kind of some of the logistics there.
Okay. Well, parking is first come, first served all over the RIT campus.
Okay.
So every parking lot is open. If you're an early bird, you're going to have no problems parking right on campus, and that is a concern that we hear from a lot of people. you know, through emails. We have overflow parking at MCC with shuttle bus service to and from MCC running every 15 minutes. I think we have 8 buses running. So really the additional travel time there is about an extra 15 minutes. So if you are planning on coming to the festival at noon or later, we would recommend using the overflow parking because that's usually when the parking lots are full.
And as much as the festival has grown, you've been able to handle the traffic and the crowds, 32 to 35,000 people.
Yep, absolutely. In fact, our focus each year in the planning is to not increase attendance necessarily, but to always improve the visitor experience.
The cost?
You're asking me the cost of the festival? You know, surprisingly to
the price to go.
Oh, the price to go. free and open to the public.
That's
absolutely
what I want.
Oh, yeah. Free, free, free. No admission.
Free and open to the public. We wanted to stress that point.
Yeah, as a behind-the-scenes planner, when you say cost,
your brain immediately. And by the way, that is an actual language problem the host had. It's the price for families. Free.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Cost for you guys. You know,
free parking, free, free entrance. Everything's free but food. So where can you go for a family of four and really just pay for food? It's less expensive than a movie, and the whole campus from east to west is wide open with all kinds of exhibits, art, engineering, you name it, everything we do. And, you know, before this, some people are a little hesitant to go into a private university, and this is like wide open, mm-hmm. welcome arms, please come. And so many kids, I've watched them just open their eyes in wonder and say, you know, I'm coming to RIT. Or dad, some little girl will say, Dad, I'm going to become an engineer. You know, it is really a phenomenal interactive experience and takes away that notion that universities and colleges are only about books. They're about books, but they're about making things and creating things and innovation. And that's what they take away.
And by the way, that interactive notion is a huge part of this. And often when you have big events, et cetera, or big demonstrations, you have your crowd and your attendance and your attendees watching something. And at Imagine RIT, I know that interaction is a big part of the experience, Barry.
It is. And it's a great experience, not just for the visitor, but it's a great experience for our students to really present their work for the first time. So they're working with faculty and staff and other students. And we've talked to them. Heather and I have talked to them repeatedly and said, you know, please try and judge your audience. If they're little kids, you don't want to really talk with high terms, big language. But obviously, if it's a cross-section, you gear your presentation to your audience.
And you had asked me, Evan, you know, what is it like if you were to just try to give people a vision of what this is? And we always send out a survey to our visitors. And anecdotally, we've had two testimonials that stand out in my mind in referring to Imagine IT as the like technological Disney World, or the science fair Disney World, or the Super Bowl of technology. So
and
that
right,
helps.
And right now we're at a point where, not to put too fine a point on it, but science is cooler than it's been in a long time. A lot of the heroes of some of the top rated shows in primetime are scientists. I mean, when I was in college, Gil Grissom rose to fame and CSI fame, and he was nothing but a great scientist on that show. I think this is a great moment in American science, don't you, Barry, for kids to kind of get involved.
I really agree, and Museum and Science Center has been doing some good things.
Yeah.
We had Bill Nye, the science guy, for a commencement speaker a few years ago, and that was a lot of fun. But, you know, it's science, but it's also magic. It's the new Magic Center and media arts and digital media. So much technology has invaded every discipline that we are involved with. And so most of these students are getting experiences working on teams, working with somebody who does marketing, somebody who knows technology better, their product, all kinds of things. So it's the wave of the future for work as well.
And I want to make sure we're clear that on the website, Heather, there is sort of a plan your day, and you can kind of get a sense for if you want to take the family out there, if your kids want to see it. But this is, it's not a small campus, so how do you know where to go? How do you know where to experience things at Imagine RIT?
We would highly recommend taking a visit to the website before you come on Saturday. So that's rit.edu/imagine. And the main story on the homepage is Plan Your Day, as you said. Plan Your Day will allow you to search for exhibits of interest by either keyword or tag. Mm-hmm. We also have some pre-planned itineraries. that you can download that are categorized by high school, middle school, and then themes such as engineering or sustainability, for example. You can plan your own itinerary for the day, and you can save it using your Facebook account. At the base of the Plan Your Day page, you can look at a print program map. So the campus is divided into zones, and those are color-coded. And the zones are as closely aligned as possible with each of RIT's 9 colleges. We also have a game for ages approximately 7 to 15 called Imagine Your Future. So with 400 exhibits, it can be very overwhelming for families and for children. But having a game where you have 3 or 4 key exhibits that are age-appropriate in each of the zones helps families to home in on where they can go, especially if they only have maybe a half day to spend.
This week, we have been focusing pretty heavily on Finger Lakes programming, and really it's regional programming that impacts all of us as we launch on WEOS and we welcome our Finger Lakes audience. This happens to be an hour in which we're focusing on an event right here in Rochester with Imagine RIT, but Barry, with 35,000 mm-hmm. people, I imagine you've got people attending from pretty far and wide here.
We really do. We've had a couple of students from Pennsylvania come up and drive overnight and actually just turn around and drive right back just to see the festival. So we get people now from the Northeast, and, you know, we're sponsored. Our premier sponsors, Time Warner Connect, A Million Minds. So they help us get out to the, you know, throughout the whole of New York State, Pennsylvania, and other areas. And we're starting to really draw people in from quite a distance, and they're making it a weekend event, just that one day.
And just to add to that, Barry, I just spoke with an alum on the phone yesterday who's coming up with his family from Virginia.
Yeah.
Okay, so it certainly is far and wide. It would be shocking if you didn't have plenty of folks from the Finger Lakes region. And now, Barry, you mentioned having kids who say, I want to be an engineer. This looks cool. I want to try it. You may end up, and you may know of already, exhibitors at Imagine RIT who went as students 6-7 years ago. That's a possibility, right?
Oh, it's not just a possibility. It's a reality because two of our student workers have told us that they came to RIT. That was the deal breaker, the deal winner, really, for RIT. Going to Imagine RIT, they decided to come here. And, you know, a lot of these students are actually creating businesses out of some of their products.
Yeah.
And that hopefully a lot of them will stay in the Rochester area and improve the economy for greater Rochester.
We're going to spend the second half hour of this hour on some of the really cool ideas that will be at Imagine RIT on Saturday. So without giving some of those away, I want to ask Barry and Heather, what do you recall from past years? What stands out in your mind that really impressed you? And look, we've got great scientific minds. They're impressing you all the time. What really staggered you in the past, Barry?
Well, it was maybe the first year when we had the automated hot dog maker. So it was actually an assembly machine using robotics that would put ketchup and mustard and everything on your hot dog, make the bun, roll it down the highway, and at the end, the visitor would get a hot dog. Well, this year we got the s'mores making machine, and I'm saying you better have a lot of dark chocolate.
S'mores making machine. Yeah. Very good. What stands out to you, Heather?
Well, I have to say that this is my third year in planning the program and logistics for the festival. So in the first 2 years, I didn't always have the luxury of really immersing myself in what was at the festival, mm-hmm. getting to see it live mm-hmm. and up close and personal. This year, I was able to meet with many more exhibitor groups. And what really has struck me in meeting with them is the emergence of accessible technology projects for the disabled. And I'm just, the one thing, for example, there's an exhibit called Smart Cane. Two proposals came in, both with the same name. So I reached out to both of them and realized that they were collaborating with each other across colleges on campus for these two projects. So they're going to actually combine their prototypes eventually into one product to help the visually impaired. So it's just overwhelming and it's inspiring, and I'm just in awe of the breadth and depth of what goes on at RIT.
So what they are doing is they're creating a GPS enabled cane. So you get the corner of Main and State and they say, well, you got 138 steps to get across, the
wow.
light's red. I mean, it's pretty amazing stuff.
This is a community that does such a wonderful job of integrating people from all walks of life, all abilities and disabilities, certainly ABVI and so many others locally here. I wonder if We're only going to continue to see more of that, Barry, in that spirit.
Oh, I think so, and I think WXXI has played a huge role in that with their partnership over the years with the Al Siegel Center, and we started out with the Disabilities Week, and now there's a longer-term plan, and we're really excited about some of the things that have happened as a result of that. We took a luncheon and made it into an alliance between Al Siegel and WXXI, and we really benefited from it. I think we've hit a sweet spot at our IT for effective accessible technology research. We first went out through the provost and asked how many people were doing it. We found 73 researchers who were already engaged. Now Ryan Raffelli, our VP for research, has really embraced this. We think in June we'll have 1,000 people coming to one of the symposiums on this.
We're talking about Imagine RIT on Saturday, 10 to 5 on the campus there of RIT. If you go to the RIT website, which is rit.edu, you can find all the information you need, not only on Imagine RIT, but on how to plan your day. There's a link there for planning your day, getting a chance to see what kind of exhibits and innovations that you'll be able to check out, what you and your family will be able to check out. It is a big event, and as Barry said earlier, not only free, you're only paying for food there. And so 10 to 5 there on the campus of RIT, and we are, I think we are in the midst of a very interesting science and technological revolution on campuses. And I'll start with Barry with this question, because this isn't just fun. There's a business application mm-hmm. here. You've got students who are still students who are creating products or services mm-hmm. that may have an application and a profit generation that could change their life mm-hmm. and their community's lives. That's not overstating it, right?
Absolutely not. It's already happening. It's happened and happening. We've had several technological apps developed and companies who've worked in social media creating new ways to do that. And you'll be able to go to hashtag ImagineRIT on that day and get all of those social media connects. But this group that you're going to meet, one of the three groups you're going to meet with a little later is Imagine Soap won first prize in Albany. And that will, I truly believe, become a product in a company that will do great things making soap from waste products for third world countries.
Yeah, that's going to be part of what we're talking about in the second half hour. Would you be surprised if some of these aren't on the market and products that are simply selling and generating their own business model there, Heather?
Oh, not surprised at all. No, and in fact, as Barry was talking, I was reminded of a student last year. I met with him to talk about his exhibit. It involved lasers, so we always put safety first, and we want to make sure our visitors are safe. And in chatting with him, he creates circuit boards, and he said, you know, I started this blog, and I've turned it into a business. So he already had a business while he was still a student. There was a demand, and he realized that he was filling this need about making circuit boards for people.
Many of our students come to RIT having run a business, and many of them leave having one or two businesses.
That's pretty remarkable. Yeah. All the information there at rit.edu for Imagine RIT. This is the seventh one, right, Barry?
That's correct.
2008 was the first one. Expecting roughly 35,000 people on the campus of RIT. You do have a 9 a.m. event, but that's fun, though not open to the public. But tell me about that.
Well, it is open to the public, but we just want to be clear that the exhibits.
Okay, the exhibits start
at 10.
Okay, that's my fault.
But yeah, but again, for you early birds out there, and those of you that are passionate about electric vehicles, like Dr. Dessler is, you need to come to campus 9 a.m. parking lot G. It's the e-autocross challenge, where we have 14 teams who will be participating in an autocross race. We have two categories. There will be modified Power Wheels vehicles. So when I say Power Wheels, I'm talking kids ride on electric toys, modified, souped up, if you will.
Yeah.
And then we'll have the larger sort of mid-sized e-vehicles like golf cart chassis and things of that nature. We have a set of bleachers out there. We have an announcer. It's a legitimate autocross race, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. in parking lot G.
All right, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. It is open to the public. It's free.
Yep.
And then at 10 a.m., you kick off the exhibits, and it opens from 10 to 5 there.
Correct. And 10 a.m. in Simone Circle, we'll have a brief opening ceremony with some welcoming remarks from President Dessler, and then we'll go from there.
All right. And let me wrap with Barry and Heather with the question of just how elaborate some of these exhibits are. Because, again, we've been talking about the concept of this for people who have not been out there. And when you see some of these, what is it? What are some of the more elaborate demonstrations that you've seen, Barry?
Well, one comes right to mind immediately, and that is it was so complex that Heather and I had to have it explained to us, and that is a physics professor worked with Thomas Warfield, a dance instructor, to create a dance program in Ingle Auditorium that demonstrated black holes. So I couldn't figure out what the heck they're doing.
It's over my head.
Yeah, me too.
What about you, Heather?
That reminds me that the professor was giving me a lesson in astrophysics, yeah. And I'm like, that's fine, but just
tell me what's going to
tell me about how many tell me how many tables and chairs you need and how much power and we'll move on. In terms of complexity, one doesn't immediately come to mind. Although I know in our Student Innovation Hall, a very popular exhibit that I don't think is returning this year, unfortunately, was the balloon exhibit, where essentially they had this sculpture of balloons that filled the entire space, and that was really very popular. So,
all right, our logistics person is about to leave us, and we're gonna talk about some of the really cool projects that we're gonna see. Anything that we missed? Anything you want families to know?
No, just if it is raining, you should still plan on coming, because 80% of the exhibits are indoors. And it's going to be a great way to spend a rainy day or a sunny day. You can't miss it.
Barry?
Give up golf and lawns. Go come to RIT.
That's right.
I have to think now, 7 years on, that it is really gratifying for you to see how far it's come, Barry.
It's one of the most gratifying experiences I've had at the university. I've been there almost 40 years, and to see how RIT has developed and started to really embrace the greater Rochester community and beyond, it couldn't be better.
We're going to take a short break, and then let's dig into the cool stuff. How about a concept for a high-tech deer alert system? Have you ever hit a deer with your car? Mm-hmm. You ever been in a car that's hit a deer? What if we stop doing that altogether because of that? How about the way we're going to change movie and filmmaking? And then Barry talked about soap, and we may take it for granted. So many parts of the world do not. RIT, imagine RIT. We're going to dig into some of that cool stuff next on member-supported public radio. Coming up in our second hour, why are kids more entitled these days? Research shows that American kids have indeed lost some of the sense of gratitude that previous generations had. A new book explores the science, and we'll talk to one of the authors as we look for ways to make sure we're raising grateful kids. That's all coming up in our second hour on Connections.
Opening this week at the Little Theater, Jodorowsky's Dune tells the story of the best sci-fi film that was never made. In 1975, director Alejandro Jodorowsky began work on his most ambitious project yet. Starring his own 12-year-old son alongside Orson Welles, Mick Jagger, and Salvador Dali, and featuring music by Pink Floyd, Jodorowsky's adaptation of the classic sci-fi novel Dune was poised to change cinema forever. So why was it never completed? See details at thelittle.org.
And welcome back. And this is one of those freewheeling hours here. By the way, our guests are going, wow, we're on. It's the shortest break in radio. This is public radio, guys. So as they get settled back in here, this is that's okay. We've got a full studio now of Imagine RIT presenters, and we're talking about some of the really interesting ideas that you'll have a chance to check out on Saturday, 10 to 5 on the campus of RIT for Imagine RIT, and it is free. And I just met Colin Axel, and Colin, we were walking down the halls, we were sprinting in here, and I said, so which one are you with? And you said...
So I'm with the driver alert system to prevent deer collisions.
To prevent deer collisions. This only applies to anyone who's ever been in a car.
That's right.
So I want you to tell me, let's start at the beginning here. How would this or does this work?
Okay, so the idea is that you're driving down the road and deer typically come from the sides of the road, come sprinting out at you when you least expect it, right? So what happens is we have two thermal cameras on top of a car looking out onto either side. And so as soon as it detects... They're looking for a certain temperature range. The temperature the deer would be at. So once it detects that range, it says, "All right, I have a threat here." And then it does some processing on board and basically gives you a location and a severity of the threat. So something that's detected as a human very close would be a very high threat. Something that might be a dog that's way far away or you might not even hit would be a very low threat. So it gives you the position of it, and then we have actually an array of this reflective material on the windshield. Actually outlines where the deer or threat would be with lasers, and it blinks at you, and then there's speakers that start beeping faster the closer you get to the threat. So you can imagine you're driving down the road, there's a deer there, all of a sudden you just get a blinking box surrounding where the deer is, so you don't even have to take your eyes off the windshield. You know there's a threat, I need to slow down, I need to stop completely.
This is... Does it work? If it's, it works, it's amazing. Does it work?
It works. Unfortunately, we won't be able to bring the truck into Imagine RIT, so it's going to be sort of a toned-down demo. But, yes, it can detect deer. It detects humans. We kind of cut it off at about the size of a dog, though.
All right. Well, Colin, it's my job as a journalist to now ask you the questions that I think our listeners are going to want to know about this. Because this is, it would be revolutionary if this were in cars, I would think. However, there are some who would say, is there a danger that this kind of technology could distract a driver? What do you think?
Well, the idea was that we wanted to make it as least distracting as possible. You know, they have these heads-up displays out there or, like, dash displays. They already have some night vision cameras that are right in your dash that you can look down at. The idea is when you're about to hit a deer, you want to be as least distracted as possible. So the idea is that, say you're looking ahead, you're going to get, like, a flashing light up there, and you can immediately say, all right, here's a threat I need to be aware of. Keep my eyes right on the road without looking down at all. So I don't think it's distracting. I think, if anything, it's definitely helping you in every situation.
How far away is the farthest distance that these – you call them sensors? I'm trying to
– So we have two thermal cameras.
Thermal cameras.
Yep. So that's the sensing part of it. And so the farthest we – it's kind of based on the geometry of how fast an object could be coming off the side of the road.
Right.
And we had to pick some average – say you're traveling at 55 miles an hour – so based on kind of the trigonometry of the situation, it cuts off at about 90 meters is the farthest.
So about 90 meters away.
So there's a deer 90 meters away. It'll tell you it's there.
Okay. And if you're going 55 miles an hour, you're going to cover 90 meters pretty quickly.
Yep. So we, based on the vehicle that we had and some kind of average statistics, we said that it gives you with 2.2 seconds to fully stop.
Or to avoid it, right?
Avoid it, yeah. So that's another thing. Even if there's a deer on the side of the road, it'll tell you that it's there. But if it's not moving, you know, you might not want to slam your brakes. There might be cars behind you. You might just want to slow down or just say, all right, I can kind of go to the left a little bit.
Or I'll be aware of it. I'm looking forward in case as I pass 2 seconds from now, I jump to. We say 2 seconds, and that sounds like it's pretty quick. However, when you're driving, if you actually count 2 seconds, that's enough time to at least begin to make a reaction or a correction, right?
So it's 2 seconds from I've seen the alert, interpreted it, so that's taking in human reaction time, and now I have 2 seconds to hit the brakes or whatever I want, not just 2 seconds from alert, 2 seconds to
right.
It's been displayed. We said kind of an average 3/4 of a second reaction time, and then 2 seconds to make your decision.
And if you're going 35 miles an hour, it's obviously a different equation.
Right, it gets better, yep.
But how much did you have to consider all of that in your design and the process of creating this technology?
Consider?
How much did you have to consider? This may work in terms of sensing. A thermal camera in a car may be able to sense a deer, but you did have to consider, will the alert distract the driver? How much time will you have? I mean, give me a sense for the thought process that went into creating it.
Right. So the biggest thing was we don't want to distract the drivers. So we had to take into account, is this thing going to give off false alarms?
Right.
Are they going to get desensitized to threats on the road? So that's why we really took into account it's only going to go off if this is like a threat that can hit on the road. If it's going too slow or it's not within the field of view of the camera, it's not going to alert you at all. And that's also why we wanted to add in the severity part to it. I don't know if you've seen these backup cameras that start beeping when you get closer to hitting a car. Kind of the same thing there. If there's something way off in the distance, you know, just a very faint, like, beep, there's something to be out there where you don't slam the brakes or anything, but if something's about to run out in front of you, you know, we want to make you really aware of
it. A different kind of alert.
Right. So It's the same visually, but then we have speakers on each side that beep with increasing frequency the closer you are to the alert or the more severe it is.
I definitely appreciate that you've thought about that you don't want to desensitize drivers to the notion of threats because then you're not considering anything.
Right.
But it sounds like you've thought about that as well. How big are the cameras?
So they sit in housing on top of it. It's about probably that big, by like a foot by a foot, basically.
You are on radio, by
yeah,
the way. You're showing me with hand motions, and here we are on radio.
It's probably about 10 inches wide by a foot long and probably about a 5-inch tall box.
I didn't mean to admonish you. You're one of the smartest local minds, and I have to remind you that people can't see that. Okay, and so how would this kind of technology end up would you purchase a car, then purchase the technology? Would it come equipped into a car that you purchase? How does that work?
Ideally, it would be equipped into a car that you purchase, kind of like an upgrade option. They have a lot of these things now, like backup cameras you could think of. Right now, this is obviously just a prototype. It wasn't cheap, I will say that. But something that could be, you know, mass-produced and put into kind of higher-end cars to start with. That's how all these things start, right? Cruise control, all of these. So you could envision down the road it could be an upgrade option for, you know, your luxury sedan or whatever.
We're talking to Colin Axel, who's going to be you'll be able to check out this technology and much more on Saturday at Imagine RIT, and he's getting a grilling on which is good, right? I mean, you got to be able to sell it, right?
Absolutely.
Have you gone down that process in any way so far in terms of exploring whether there is a market that you think will work with this?
Not yet.
Okay. And how will you do that?
We'll have to tackle that beast when the time comes. This is actually the product of a class, a first-year PhD class in the imaging science department. So it's kind of a project that we were given that we had to do, and Imagine RIT is kind of our end goal of it. But now that we have this system and we have it working,
might as well see, right? Especially if it hasn't been cheap. And the concept started when? When was this idea born?
The first week of classes. This is the first year the PhD program has actually came up with this idea that we're going to get every first-year PhD student in a room together, just give them some open-ended problem, and just walk off, hands off.
But hold on. You're going to present on Saturday, and this concept was born just a few weeks or months ago?
No, the first week of classes in the fall semester.
Okay. This past fall, yeah. That's a pretty rapid development, isn't
it? Yes. We had to kind of constrain the problem. That's why we chose, you know, deer and stuff. But it was about first 3 weeks of design, presenting, get everything approved, and then get straight to building.
And have you ever hit a deer?
I personally have never hit a deer. I've had a few close calls.
You ever been in a car that's hit a deer?
Not when I was in one. I've seen the aftermath, though, and it is not pretty.
My engineer, Dave Campo, is yelling at me behind the glass. Me last week. Is that true? Last week? Yes. Bad? Really bad? He's telling you. Pretty. He says, I wish he had the device out a little bit earlier. That's what Dave says behind the glass. The next project for you, can you make them smarter? They're beautiful creatures. They're about the dumbest things I can possibly imagine on this planet. It's really remarkable. They have the highest ratio of beauty to inverse proportion of brains. So I appreciate that. And so we'll be able to check it out where, Colin, on Saturday?
Gordon Fieldhouse at RIT. We'll be presenting from 10 to 5.
That's pretty cool stuff. And again, we're talking Imagine RIT Saturday, 10 to 5 on the campus there. If you've never been there, it is an innovation and creativity festival. More than 400 exhibits. They expect more than 30,000 people. And the only thing you're paying for is the food out there. Now, let's kind of go around the room now and let's find what else we have in the room. Now that we know that we'll never have to hit a deer again, and we appreciate that from Colin, in our quick change out here, things got scuttled awfully quickly. So let me go to the far microphone. Sir?
Yes.
In the beard, because our listeners can see you. Colin thinks they can see us. Introduce yourself.
My name is Brennan Gordon, and I am working on Imagine Soap.
Imagine Soap. And right. Barry Culhane talked about that a little bit earlier in the hour. Tell us about what Imagine Soap is.
So Imagine Soap confronts this problem which occurs in much of the developing world, which is that hygiene-related illness is at such an astronomical rate. And one way to actually bring down that rate is just to give people greater access to soap and hygiene education. And so what we're trying to do actually in Haiti, starting in Haiti and moving to other countries, is actually teach people there, create franchise businesses, and teach entrepreneurs how to make soap from used cooking oil. And then basically sell that soap to the community at below market prices.
Wow, from used cooking oil. So what's the process of taking used cooking oil and creating soap with it?
I mean, a lot of actually restaurants in the U.S. discard their cooking oil or have that recycled. So what we're trying to do is implement a similar process where we would reclaim some of the cooking oil from the street vendors, from the restaurants down there, and actually go through a process of straining it to reach a higher purity level. And then basically you mix that, or you get that to the right temperature, and you mix that with lye and water. And you can basically make a true soap that lasts twice as long as a lot of the soaps that you find on the shelves today.
And when a problem like this gets attacked in some way, when you identify an issue, you've got to know it's a problem to begin with. How did you choose Haiti? Right. How did that awareness and that project get started with Haiti?
Well, actually, prior to – so I'm currently a second-year industrial design grad at RIT. And prior to enrolling, I spent 5 years working in the disaster recovery field. And that involved everything from being on the ground in New Orleans, post-Katrina, building homes there, working on a FEMA grant there. And then moving over to Haiti and doing helping run a program where we were building schools and transitional shelters and communities in Haiti. And that led on – that followed with going to Japan, actually, post-tsunami. So Haiti is kind of the area that I have some experience already in 2010 and 2011.
Wow, Brandon. So you have seen some of the most affected parts of humanity, unfortunately. you have. It's really been tough. What is it like for you personally working on projects that have this? Frankly, there's a lot of possible need and application for something like this. Give me the sense for not just the scientific excitement, but the intrinsic value of working on a project like this.
I think, you know, one of the things that I've always been interested in, and the reason why I've chosen design is because I think there's a greater level of sustainable design that can be involved in some of the projects that we're implementing in some of these communities. And for me, it's about being able to build up a community's capacity to, you know, weather change. And I think that for me, this bears a lot of weight because, you know, even when I was growing up, it wasn't something where I was given, you know, everything. You know, my family lived through some situational poverty. So for me, it's about kind of giving back and understanding to a certain empathetic level, you know, what these people really want as opposed to just free handouts.
And what they really need, and obviously you're basing part of this on your own experience having been there and understand what some of those needs are. I'm always curious to know when the top innovators and inventors and people who collaborate on these great ideas, if there's this concern in the back of your mind that I hope someone hasn't already done this. You know, and I didn't even ask Colin. I mean, did you have to look around to make sure no one had already done the whole car thermal camera thing to make sure that you don't hit a deer?
We did. I mean, the problem was presented to us. We, for our own knowledge, wanted to look out. And they do have night vision cameras in cars, but they're all very specified towards humans. And being in the Northeast, you know, deer are a huge problem out here. You see them all the time.
Sure.
So we thought, you know, why not extend the technology? It's already there.
All right. So you did your homework and you found that what exists is inadequate. We can do better. Yeah. Okay. And Brennan, so you had a good sense regarding the soap that you'd seen the need already. There was no question that this has to be done in some way.
Right.
How far along do you feel you are with this and what do you expect to happen with this?
Well, we've been working on this for about a year. We've been at the point where we've been trying to get some funding to actually, you know, kick off a pilot program. And we've spent the last semester actually working with the business incubator at RIT and running through some of the channels at RIT to get some focus groups on the ground going on, what just happened this last week was we won our division, the nonprofit and social division, at the New York State Business Challenge competition. So that kind of gave us $10,000 now that we can work with. So we can go to Haiti this summer and we can begin to kind of ramp up operations in terms of making connections with other organizations and identifying entrepreneurs and then looking toward getting at basically 75,000 risen by the end of the year to kick off a pilot program.
And on Saturday, your exhibit will be where? And give me a sense for what it will look like.
We're going to be in the Clark Gym and we're actually going to be making some soap, which is going to be exciting to watch. And we'll have basically kind of a cooking show going on with some soap. Maybe Walter White style. We're not sure. Maybe we'll be having the don the full rags. But yeah, we're going to be making soap and giving out some free handouts as well.
He means Walter White in just the stylistic approach.
Exactly.
Not the end result here.
We're not going to be doing that kind of cook.
No, absolutely. In fact, kudos to you and the group that you work with, Brendan. That's really, really amazing stuff. And
thanks a lot.
And I know that it's going to impact a lot of people. All right, Sean Cooper.
Yes.
Sean, you are working on what project?
I'm working on the Holodeck Project, which is a collaboration among fellow undergraduate students working as the student chapter of the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers.
Motion Picture and Television Engineers.
Yes.
And what is a holodeck?
Holodeck is a fictional room out of the Star Trek universe where you can walk in and experience any world at any point in time. And it's a fully immersive environment.
Hold on. Before you even go any further here, and I'm going to out myself, and I'm going to feel somewhat embarrassed to say that I'm not a Trekkie. So for Trekkies, is this a common thing, a part of Star Trek?
Yes.
Okay. I'm really sorry. I hear a lot of people changing the channel on the radio already. But okay, so That's the Star Trek idea. But this relates to green screens, right?
Correct.
And for those who aren't familiar with the filmmaking process, tell us what a green screen is.
Green screen is it's a mat that you'll place behind actors or objects, and you will key out the background so that you can use the objects in front of the green screen for compositing visual effects and things like that.
So the really bad old days green screens or old day back... Well, some of the old sets, I guess, used to not be green screens. They were just really kind of hackishly painted or created backdrops, right?
It's actually kind of interesting because our project kind of goes back to the old days before green screen, where actually in our method is to use projection to a fully surrounding wall. For us, it's just two walls that covers 320 square feet of projection. And instead of using the green screen, we're projecting the environment directly onto the set so that the actors don't have to imagine where they are. They can see where they are.
And in some ways react to what they see too, right?
Correct, yeah.
So it would the idea is it would improve not only the experience for the actors, but hopefully the end product, because they would be simulating something that's much more realistic,
right,
and would translate for the viewing experience.
Yes.
Why doesn't this exist already?
There's a number of reasons. There's a lot of interesting color ramifications of projecting an image and then capturing that on camera again. I call it imaging chain recursion because it kind of folds on itself. But it was recently used, and I was actually inspired by the recent film Oblivion with Tom Cruise, where they had a set piece that was this large floating house that was largely made of glass, and they didn't want to use green screen because it would have been awful. It would have refracted and reflected throughout the entire house. You'd see it everywhere. So instead, they surrounded the entire set with projection, and they actually went to the top of some mountains in Iceland and captured 360 view panoramas and reprojected that onto the set so that the actors could see their environment. So that's kind of the inspiration for what we did.
Wow. And how far along do you feel this concept is for you, and what's the possible application or the realistic chances that this goes somewhere?
Yet to be determined, but okay. We've worked for only about this semester's worth, and we have the projection.
This project is one semester old?
Yes.
This is just amazing to me. I thought these things were all years in the making, but go ahead.
Yeah. So we're projecting onto the environment, but the problem is that if you just project onto a wall, a static image, it looks like essentially wallpaper. So we've added motion tracking elements where we can track the camera's movements and adjust the background accordingly. So we adjust for things like motion parallax, or imagine where if you're driving through a car, things closer to you move a lot faster and the mountains in the distance stay at the same distance, or stay at the same position.
Mm-hmm.
So in a virtual set, if you need to move your camera around an actor, you don't want the background to stay static. You want it to move according to the orientation of the camera.
That's probably a complicated problem to tackle.
It started out being pretty complicated.
It started out being, but you think you've got it down?
We think we've got it down, yeah.
Wow. And so what are we going to see on Saturday? Where are you, and what kind of a demonstration do you have?
We're in the basement of Gannett, and we're actually going to have a preview of some footage we shot on camera, and also we're going to allow kids to track the motion tracking element to their heads and walk around the scene as if they were the camera so that the background will change accordingly.
Oh, very, very cool. That should be fun. I remember a movie called The Truman Show with Jim Carrey. You've seen The Truman Show?
I have.
Not only was he didn't realize that much of his world was an enormous, essentially painted backdrop, but when he tried to escape, he crashed his boat directly into it. Imagine the way that, and now we're getting meta because we're getting a story within a story, but imagine the way filmmaking could change. Do you expect that this is, whether it's your technology or some variation, that this is the future of filmmaking?
Perhaps. I think it would be very useful, and especially in motion capture studios, because the actors are completely playing pretend. They can't see a single thing.
Yeah.
They have the tracking balls strapped to them. So if they could see the environment that they're pretending to be in, I think it would be really helpful.
That's, to me, one of the really remarkable parts of the way film is put together in so many cases. In fact, I spoke last week to Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he talked about the way they shoot the show Cosmos. And I joked with him. I said, boy, that green screen looked really like the Grand Canyon, you know, for your recent episode. And he laughed, and he said, but no, they were at the Grand Canyon, and they were in Rome, and they've been on six continents. The one place where they had to get a green screen was Manhattan, because it was too expensive to get things done down there, and they actually had to do a green screen.
Right.
And he said, that's different than doing it live, where you're standing somewhere. So very, very interesting concept here. Well, certainly good luck with that, Sean. Now, let me begin to wrap the hour here. We've got a few more minutes talking about Imagine RIT that is on Saturday, 10 to 5 on the campus of RIT. If you go to rit.edu, you can find a Plan Your Day tab, get a look at the different exhibits, get a look at what's out there. It's been a very successful 6 years, and this is their seventh year doing it, attracting families, kids in middle school, high school, et cetera. I'm curious to know if our panelists who are presenting, did you ever attend Imagine RIT?
Not really. Every single year I've presented.
You've been presenting for since how long?
This is my third year.
And good fun?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Did you attend at all?
No. I mean, I was a presenter last year as well. So
second year presenting.
Yeah.
Colin?
Yeah, I've attended it as an undergraduate student, walking around, seeing all the cool stuff.
And is this your?
This is my first year.
First year presenting. Okay, so we have a first year presenter.
Yes.
Any nerves?
Not really. We've got it down pretty good. We know what we're doing now. I'm actually excited.
I think you should be nervous. 35,000 people.
Well, the interesting dynamic is you have little kids, and you have to be able to present your system to them. But then you also have business professionals, you know, experts in the field coming around. So you have to be able to hit it from all angles.
That is a great point, and it came up in our last half hour. So for families who are thinking about going on Saturday, they do, and Heather Catone made that point, that, as Colin just said, you have to be able to present to all audiences and make sure you're comfortable with all. So kids, obviously, you've already talked, Sean, about kids are going to be able to participate in your exhibit.
Definitely.
So you'll be able to kind of converse with whoever the audience is.
Yep.
And how about soap? Can it relate to everybody?
I mean, I think we're going to have the handouts that in terms of getting kids on board, it's going to be a little more difficult. We were thinking about actually having a fryer there where we would actually just take the cooking oil from the fryer, be able to give out food and the soap itself. But I think it's something that we can definitely break down for whoever's listening. You know?
All right. Well, can I bring in Ellen Rosen to the conversation? Ellen is with RIT, and I know you've seen it come together. For Saturday, if you're just joining the conversation, it's rain or shine, Ellen.
It's rain or shine. As we said, 80% of the exhibits are indoors. So you shouldn't have any problem just coming out to the campus. We've got three excellent examples here this afternoon of the exhibits, but this is really just the tip of the iceberg.
Yep.
We've got 400-plus exhibits, everything from the arts and sciences. We've got some new video games that our students are actually working on going to be bringing to market, one of which is multiple players can play at the exact same time. It's called Chain Gang. We've got some human-powered water sanitizer. We've got robotic musical chimes that are created by engineers. We've got a robotic s'mores maker, Barry mentioned before, that you can customize your s'more and pick your kind of chocolate. With that smart cane that Barry talked about, that'll be on exhibit. We've got a group of students that are going to be painting with microbes, painting with microorganisms. So we've got a wide variety of things in the arts, sciences, technology, really something for everybody.
Question on Twitter, are you going to try the ice cream? You have to tell us how it is.
It's supposed to be very good. There's special RIT Tiger ice cream. It's tiger striped. It's going to be outside of our student, I believe it's going to be outside the SAU, which is the Student Alumni Union, and yes, you should give it a try.
Do the presenters, do you guys check out what other people are doing, or are you so busy with your own that it's impossible to check?
I'm in sort of a unique situation since this is a class project. There's 20 of us, so we're taking shifts, so I'm going to have at least 3 hours to walk around, see all the other exhibits. I know that's probably harder for people that it's two or three presenting.
Besides the two in the room that you've heard about, anything that you've already checked off that you want to go see?
Yeah, I heard about these people that developed an app where you can put your friend on a little scooter and drive them around with the app. So I definitely want to see
smart
that.
Smart buggy, yes,
Smart buggy.
Yes.
Very cool.
And there's a restaurant app, too, called All Access Menus, which is out of our Venture Creations Incubator, where you actually can scan your restaurant and you get every bit of information about that restaurant right in your phone. So a lot of great stuff.
Any things stand out to you? Are you going to have any time, Brendan, to
go
see?
No, I'm not going to have any time. There's only three of us this year.
Last
year,
you're tied to the soap.
Right.
You are tied to the soap. Sean?
There's a group of us, so I'll be able to get around, and hopefully this year I'll get some liquid nitrogen ice cream, because I've yet to do that.
Am I missing, Ellen? There's a lot of buzz about this ice cream.
There's a lot of buzz about ice cream. He's talking about one kind of ice cream, and then we've also got a group of kids that are making, they've custom made some tiger-striped ice cream, and we're the RIT Tigers. So this is ice cream that's customized to look like RIT Tiger Stripes. I'm not sure. They've been going back and forth on what the actual flavors are, whether it's bacon and something else butterscotch and something. I'm not sure, but it's supposed to be exciting. But there's a lot of food, experimental food, as well as food being sold by vendors.
Let's be clear. The best innovation we could have is adding bacon to anything in the world.
Absolutely.
If RIT can do that, I think we can agree that Imagine RIT is a success. Anything else stand out to you that you've seen that you want to go check out?
Not yet, but I'll definitely be filtering around.
Okay. Ellen, we got less than a minute left here. On the website, the Plan Your Day, they can do what?
They can go on Plan Your Day. They can pick an itinerary based on levels of interest, on age of the students that they're going to be bringing. It'll give you a map of the campus. You can pick out and actually build a whole itinerary that you can print out and take with you.
And one more question via Twitter on parking. We've covered it a few times, but one more time on the parking.
Parking is as you arrive, if it's available. But please note that we have parking at MCC, and there's free shuttle bus service back and forth from MCC. So we're hoping folks will take advantage of it, because campus fills up pretty quickly.
Colin, Brendan, Sean, thank you for taking the time. Good luck on Saturday. Have fun, and really admire the work that you guys are doing. Really interesting to hear about some of the innovations. Ellen, nice to see you.
You too, Evan.
And just so much fun to imagine the future with Imagine RIT. So great stuff. Check it out online. Take a quick break and come back, and we're going to find out more about our kids. In our next hour, are we raising kids to be grateful, or do the kids these days have a sense of entitlement, and how do we change that? The science of gratitude is next.
This program is a production of WXXI Public Radio.